All right, so what was the inspiration for the book? I'm sure a lot of people have been saying over the years, like, why hasn't Bob come out with a book earlier?
Well, we started doing it in the 80s, and we couldn't get a publishing company. And that was, there wasn't many books written about wrestlers, and they didn't want to give it a shot. So, you know, and I kept thinking about it. And I got a letter from somebody in 09. And prior to that, I was thinking I wasn't going to get a book written before I left this earth because there wasn't anything really happening. So, but anyway, this gentleman wrote me a letter in 09, actually a FedEx, and it said in the letter that I was his childhood hero. He wrote two other books, and he wanted to write a book about me.
Wow.
So we said, I called him about a week later and said, yeah, let's talk. And he came down to the Glastonbury Library, and we sat there, and I was kind of worried about beating him because I wasn't a character.
Yeah.
He wanted to meet me to find out if I was really that person that he idolized when he was young. And we met, and we started writing the book, and it took us 5 years to get to this point.
So what was it like working with Robert H. Miller on this? Like, what was the whole process like? Did you guys just sit down and chat, and he told you story? You told him stories, or how did you guys work together on this?
He came down to Glastonbury, and we met at the library a couple different times. And, you know, like, the first time we went there, we were going to only meet for maybe 20 minutes, and it lasted 2 hours. The times that I spent with him were, like, the time went so fast. We had so much fun, and it was so interesting to be able to tell your life story to somebody. It was never, like, work. It was always just the time flew by. But it was a pleasure doing business with him. And, I was really kind of down, just before Rob Miller sent me the FedEx, because I didn't think there was any hope anymore. And I was kind of dreaming about it all my life to have that happen, because I wanted to tell it in my words what happened in my life.
So Roddy Piper wrote the foreword to the book. Can you just talk about that process, how you got Roddy to write the foreword, and then what kind of impact did he really have on your career?
Well, Roddy Piper, the book, Rob Miller met with him out in Iowa, or Illinois, maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago. And he had that promo for a long, long time, and then he decided to use it in the foreword. And I had a big match with Roddy Piper when he was new in the business in the Olympic Theater in California, and we went 59 minutes and 30 seconds. he said some really great things about that match, and it made me cry three times when I read what he wrote.
So let's have a little bit of fun. What I'm going to do is I'm going to mention 10 people that you've crossed paths with in your career, and then you just say kind of like the first thing that comes to your mind about them, okay?
Okay.
All right, so Billy Graham.
Billy Graham was a great entertainer and a great in the ring. I know he was very upset sort of when he was the belt was going to be turned over to me, but he always worked hard in the ring, and I respect him a lot for that because he never let down as far as his work in the ring.
Okay, Harley Race.
Harley Race was a very, he was a great man. I had a lot of hour matches with him.
Uh-huh.
Everyone was a pleasure, and he was kind of the foundation of my career, and he was very instrumental in developing me into a worker that could come to the WWE and change the format of the wrestling as far as in the ring.
Okay, Antonio Inoki.
Antonio Inoki, over in Japan, he's the boss over there. I really enjoyed the matches with him also. I loved every time I went to the ring. I don't care where it was, but Inoki was a very interesting person. He didn't speak a word in English hardly, and in the matches, we just played it by ear, and we kind of knew what each other were going to do, so we never had a problem as far as communicating. We just played it all by ear, and I liked his talent in the ring.
Okay, Stan Hansen.
Stan Hansen and I, there's a big thing. I went to Amarillo, Texas, and Terry Funk did something for me that nobody else in the world would ever do, and Stan Hansen was trained by by Terry Funk, and we had a little, he had a little problem with that because they pushed me ahead of him, and I figured that would be happening, but we had some problems with that later on in life.
Okay, Vern Gagne.
I watched Vern Gagne wrestle when I was a kid growing up. I went to a University of Minnesota wrestling match when I was in eighth grade, and he was there, and I was scared to go say hello to him, but I respect him a lot. My mom was a big wrestling fan, and my home, we couldn't leave home till after 9 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday, and if we had to be in, because she would miss wrestling, and we had to be home before wrestling would start.
Ken Patera.
Ken Patera was the strongest man in the world, but he was probably the most gentle man in the ring, and he was, I really loved working with him. He was helped me a lot. I wrestled him my first match up in this area in New Jersey, Wildwood, New Jersey, matter of fact. And he was a great performer.
Right, Kevin Nash.
Kevin Nash. You know, I didn't really get to know him very well, but you know, I was asked to lose the WWF title to him, or WWE, I should say, to him in Madison Square Garden. And I was trained by Harley Race and Terry Funk to, you do the best you can to make the match, not yourself or the opponent. And I crawled out of the ring all the way back to the dressing room to make his hold look good.
Okay, Kurt Angle.
Kurt Angle, you know, was a great amateur wrestler. I had a lot of respect for him. But, you know, I kind of wish that he didn't succumb to the peer pressure in the business on certain issues.
Okay, Bret Hart.
Bret Hart, I wrestled him in 94. He was willing to turn over the championship match to me, and I was told that I was going to be giving it back to him a year later, and I was going to be, I was very excited to be able to put it back on him in that process. But then, in the meantime, Macho Man Randy Savage left the business, and that's why they told me we got to turn the belt over to Diesel.
Okay. Last but not least, Vince McMahon.
Vince McMahon is probably one of the hardest working people there are in any kind of business. He's there all the time. He's there scrutinizing the matches. He's still doing that. I respect that end of his life completely.
Okay, so there's a lot of wrestlers out there with books now. It's like every year, you know, these guys are coming out with their books. What do you think makes your book really special? What makes your story different from everyone else's?
Well, how many All-American boys are out there in the wrestling business?
Not many.
anyway, I have a story of my life. But my goal, our goal was to, we put some things in there that I learned. I learned something about peer pressure when I was in eighth grade, and I never came to it again. I learned something about not giving up in eighth grade also. And I learned something in when I was a junior in high school that hard work pays off. We have, it's a motivational book. We have 18 principles that can help you live a healthy, happy life. So I believe, and I read a book in 1985 that was very good for me, and we tried to make a book almost like that. I was in a little bit of a rut, because what are you going to do when you're done wrestling? You did 6 years as the champion in the greatest company in the world as far as wrestling concerned. I didn't think there was any future left, and I was thinking about the past instead of the future, and this book turned me around, and my future is better than the past ever was right now.
How difficult do you think that is, like, after you hang up your boots? I mean, you've come back a bunch of times, and you've had a ton of success every time that you've come back. And even in other promotions, fans are always happy to see you. You always get a pop. But once you're kind of, like, off the road, and you're kind of becoming, I don't know, like a civilian again, how difficult is that to kind of readjust?
You know, after reading this book, I was very, I learned how to control what I was thinking about. I started an oil business when I was 59, and I loved the oil business. And, you know, most people in the wrestling business probably hate that, but I taught myself to love it. And I was very anxious to get up in the morning at 3 o'clock in the morning and go get oil and go deliver it to people's houses. I did some sheetrock. I had a sheetrock business for a while, and I like that. I like my life. I like what I'm doing, and I love the thought of being able to have somebody purchase a book from me, and it has the potential of changing their lives because of some principles that are in it.
And you're a married guy. You've got a wife, a family. I mean, how hard is it when you're on the road away from your family? And then how do you readjust to family life when you're done with your in-ring career?
Well, my wife and I have been married for 40 years. I had a person by the name of Dick Murdoch in Amarillo, Texas, tell me, "Don't get your family tied up with the business."
Mm-hmm.
Wife and I said, we made a rule. I don't go watch her teach school, and she does not come and watch me wrestle. And she still honors that rule. When I was put in the Hall of Fame, she said, "I don't go watch you wrestle, and you're not going to come and watch me teach school."
What about your daughter? Did she watch you wrestling growing up? How has you being Bob Backlund, you know, affected her life?
No, I kept her away from the business also. I didn't want her in the business because it was what was going on in the business. I didn't like what was going on behind the scenes with the guys.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't enjoy it. I didn't want to be a part of it. I stayed out of the dressing room, and most of them probably hated me, but I wouldn't bend my rules because of the things that I made that happened to me when I was in high school.
I was just going to say, do you think that impacted maybe the longevity of your career by not getting involved in, you know, cliques in the back and stuff like that?
No, that wasn't what stopped my career. The man that became a father to me almost, Vince McMahon Sr., was the most honorable man in my life, and he became like a dad to me. And I was his All American boy. He passed away, and Mr. Backlund, the All American boy, was done.
Do you still watch the sport today? Like, if so, like, do you have any thoughts on, like, the current state of the industry? Like, how do you think that you would be, how do you think you'd be packaged in today's industry?
Well, you know, when I was inducted in the Hall of Fame, I said, Triple H, I'd like to get in the ring and put a little more W in the ring. I wouldn't want to have a match if I had to use a chair or a table or a ladder or something like that, unless it was on a special occasion, maybe. I would like to get into the ring and use talent as far as wrestling goes. And it's hard for them to do that now because all of it was house shows or in arenas where it wasn't on TV, some of those matches that you go for an hour just doing back and forth with wrestling matches or wrestling holes. The guys are in great shape now. They're getting beat up. They're getting sore. They're getting hurt. And I feel for them. They're going through a lot and they're paying a big price. But they're still in there trying to entertain the people, and that's the bottom line in wrestling. You know, when you're in college wrestling, you want to win, and you have a different attitude when you're a professional wrestler. You want to entertain those people to the max.
Did you think on your second return to the WWE, I mean, you made such a solid transition. You were the All-American boy the first time. You were their second longest reigning WWE champion of all time. You made your living on the mat, wrestling. And you still did that when you came back, but you also brought in that Mr. Backlund personality. Was that difficult for you, or was that something that you kind of just jumped right into?
I went back at that time to be an All-American boy. And then I realized that the 90s people had changed a lot from the 80s. They didn't want to hear about mom and dad and apple pie and hard work and dedication. They wanted to see somebody maybe disrespecting their boss and different things like that. They didn't buy the All-American boy anymore. And I asked Vince McMahon if I could be bad by being good. I said I built up a voluminous vocabulary so I could agitate the plebeians. I was being bad, but I was saying good things. I said, we got to make you responsible for your own actions. And I had a policy that you had to recite the presidents of the United States to me to procure my signature. And I did that because I wanted kids to be able to use their memory to get better and stronger and get more prepared for the world. And what's wrong with that, sir?
Nothing at all.
But I became the most hated guy in the business because of that.
Oh, that's irony, huh?
I did a promo one time for 5 minutes and never said a word. Every time I brought the microphone up to my lips, the people screamed so loud they couldn't hear me. So I bring it down again. And I did a promo 5 minutes. And everybody complained that I couldn't do an interview because the way I was be doing All-American Boy interview. Mm-hmm. Everybody said, Bob Backlund can't do an interview. But after becoming Mr. Backlund, they did change their opinion of that.
Uh-huh, absolutely. If you could wrestle anyone in the industry today that you haven't laced the boots against, who do you think it would be and why?
Brock Lesnar.
How do you...
He's a great wrestler. I know it would be just about impossible. All of my matches were just about impossible. I just got, caught somebody in a quick move, and then they were usually on their feet, and I was on my mat because of the beating they gave me. But I always find some way to squeeze in and get a win. It was kind of a hope thing that there's a possibility he could do it no matter who it is.
Yeah.
And I believe that anybody can be beat.
So, bottom line, why should someone read this book?
If they're a wrestling fan, it's a heck of a story. There's a lot of things that happened in that people don't know about. There's some miracles that happened throughout my career. And I believe the biggest thing is that we want mom and dad to read the book, and then we want them to hand it down to their children because of the principles that a young person can learn. And I made a lot of mistakes. When I was in junior high school, the teachers hated me. I was hanging on the fence where I was just about going to fall off the fence on my face, and my life would have been miserable for the rest of my life. I went the other way, slowly, 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 slowly. But by the time I was a senior, I was ready to go in high school. I was ready to go out and challenge the world and climb to the top of the ladder in the WWE and climb over people that had been there for 10 years thinking that they were going to get the championship after a certain amount of time. I outworked them.